Well, let me begin by thanking the organizers for inviting me here, because I am, in some sense, a little external to this community. I am somebody who found this resilience theory when I met David Zazen some years ago, and found it extremely useful in the setting of the problems of exponentially small phenomena in dynamical systems. And this is what this work is about. It's a joint work with Pau Martín from the Polytechnic University of Catalunya, and David Zazen from the CNRS of Paris, France. So the problem here, I will spend some minutes to introduce you to the dynamical problem, and then we are going to go to the resilience part, no? Sorry. Why is not... Ah, this is... Okay. All right. So the problem is... So should I press this twice? No. Well, it's okay. So the problem is the following one. You have a map here, that is this map here, that is a map on the plane, okay? Then the map is called the Macmillan family, when this term here is not there. So when epsilon, let me say the parameter epsilon is zero. So when the parameter epsilon is zero, this is called the Macmillan family, and I'm going to introduce you the problem when we put here a perturbation of this Macmillan family, that is this function B prime here. So we have this map, and the family of maps here, just let me, to begin with, let me tell you that here there are two parameters, mu and epsilon, okay? Mu is written here, is the hyperbolic cosinus of H, and during all this talk, the parameter H will be small, so mu will be close to one. Epsilon instead will be, I will try to produce results when epsilon is not small, but I will begin explaining things when epsilon is small, okay? So, here you have that these maps that are preserving, you have the parameter mu. B, we assume that B is a even holomorphic function in some domain, bounded domain, for y, h, and epsilon in some bounded domain, and we assume that B prime is odd, and even in H. On the other hand, we assume, this is important, even if it is not completely necessary, but it's important in the computations we do, that the Taylor expansions of B prime begins by terms of order 5, okay? So in this setting, we have the following dynamical consequences. First, the map has a fixed point at 0, 0. Let me wait a moment. Yeah, as you can see very easily here, with this hypothesis, 0, 0 is a fixed point of this map. Moreover, if you compute the eigenvalues of this fixed point, it is a saddle. Okay, it's a saddle, and the eigenvalues are given by the exponential of this parameter h and the exponential of minus h. So if h is bigger than zero, these eigenvalues are bigger, one is bigger than one in modulus, and the other is smaller than one. So this is a saddle. But this is a weakly hyperbolic point in the sense that h is small, so these eigenvalues are close to one, okay, when h goes to zero. This is the reason why H is our important parameter here. This is called the characteristic exponent. And as we have a saddle, or have a weakly hyperbolic point, has a saddle, as the classical theory says, this saddle has invariant, stable and stable invariant manifolds. But in this case, as we are in a map on the plane, it are just curves. So during this talk, I will be interested in these curves, in understanding how is the dynamic of these curves. And one important thing for these curves that is also a very, let me say, you know, result is that these curves have natural parametrizations. You can look for these curves in different ways, looking for them as graphs. There are several ways to look for the stable and stable manifolds of a point, but for us it will be very useful to use these parametrizations of the curve. So we are going to take one parameter in such a way that when we apply the map to one of these curves, you get another point of the map that is exactly when the parameter is t plus h. Okay? H is, remember, the characteristic exponent. These are natural parametrizations in the sense that if the map was linear, these parametrizations will be simply the exponential of t, okay? Or the exponential of minus t in the case of the stable and unstable manifold. What will be different for the stable or the unstable one will be that when t goes to infinity, one goes to the point, and when t goes to minus infinity, the other goes to the point. So these are the manifolds of this point. And then, no, oh, sorry. Wait, problems. I pressed the wrong key, so sorry. Okay, so exactly. So we're talking about this manifold. So the first thing is to understand what is, which is the dynamic when epsilon is zero. When epsilon is zero, this is the map, the this is what I call the Macmillan map, is an integrable map, in the sense that the level curves of the map, of the trajectories of the map, are given by this Hamiltonian. So this is a very easy thing, and you can find all the invariant curves of the map, but I'm not going to focus on this. I'm going just to focus on the stable and unstable manifold of the origin. So here you can see that the unstable manifold coincides with the stable manifold, giving you an homoclinic orbit. This is what happens when epsilon is zero in the Macmillan map, because the map is integrable. So the problem for us is what happens when epsilon is different from zero. We want to understand how these manifolds behave when epsilon is different from zero. And then I'm going to put here some properties that are important. The first one is that this is a reversible map. You have this involution, that is the involution that changes y for x. This is important because, for instance, if you have the parametrization for the unstable manifold, immediately you obtain the parametrization for the stable manifold just using the involution and changing time. Okay? And moreover, if you have that your manifold intersects the line of fixed points of the involution, automatically this intersection is an homoclinic point. So what you know a priori without doing any computation is that as when epsilon was zero, wait a moment, the unstable and the stable manifold cross this line transversally, this is going to happen again when epsilon is different from zero. So you will be sure that there will be homoclinic points. And this is what this picture shows. So this is the picture when epsilon is different from zero. You have your unstable manifold that crosses here. And when it crosses, this is an homoclinic point that is the intersection with the stable one. Remember that we are dealing with maps, so the intersection can be transversal. And once the maps intersect, they intersect in all the images and perimeters of the point, giving you a homoclinic orbit. Okay? So the question to us was to measure or this angle or this area, something that measures the transversality between these manifolds to show if these manifolds are coinciding or not, again, etc. And to produce some perturbation theory that gives you the measure of this intersection. You can choose to measure this angle or you can choose to measure this area, the area of the lobes. That is better because the area is invariant if you apply the map, because the map is area preserving. Okay? So this is what we are going to measure. And this work is the, let me say, the continuation of a previous result of Delzans and Ramirez-Ross, where they prove the following formula. They prove that this area that I show you is given by this formula here. Let me just put your attention. This is just a number, okay? You have epsilon in front, that is natural, because as you did an epsilon perturbation, the phenomenon has to be of size epsilon, so it is normal. But then you have that this term here is an exponentially small term in H. Remember that H was the parameter that was small in this talk. So this means that if you were measuring the area in using the classical perturbation theory, using power series in H, you will never find this formula because this is asymptotically equal to zero in terms of H, okay? How the authors prove this using a classical approach in these problems of splitting of separatrices, that is just the Melnikov approach. I'm not going to go here now, but just saying that to be sure that this Melnikov formula works, they use this extra hypothesis here. So they need to assume that the parameter epsilon was small in terms of the parameter h, which is, let me say, quite an artificial condition, but of course this work was a big progress in the area because to prove these formulas is not easy at all. So the other thing that I want to mention here is this term that appears here, that is a number, but this number is exactly, if you go to the function B, that was the perturbed function, okay, that was in the here, okay, so you take B, that is just a power series, and you consider its Borel transform. And then the formula for the area gives you that this is the Borel transform of the function B evaluated in 2π. So the authors didn't use any resurgence theory, any theory of singularities, nothing, but when they compute the Melnikov formula, they realized that this number was exactly this, but they couldn't explain why, okay? So our idea was first, try to prove why this thing appears here, And moreover, try to show which is the formula if you don't put this assumption here. So in principle, we would like to prove the same when epsilon is small, or even better, to prove a formula that does not need at all to assume that epsilon is small, just h, okay? This is the setting of the problem. And this is the theorem we obtain. So the theorem says that if you don't assume anything about epsilon except some technical assumptions that give you that epsilon is smaller than some coefficient, that is not an asymptotic formula for epsilon is small, the one I am showing here, but it is an asymptotic formula when h is small, because this error term here means something that goes to zero when h goes to zero. So this is an asymptotic formula in h, and gives you that there is a coefficient in this area formula, the same exponentially small term, a coefficient here, that if you now take epsilon small, then you see that this coefficient is in fact, up to first order in epsilon, the coefficient the previous results show. So in fact, you get a generalization of the formula that is also true when epsilon is, let me say, of order one, but that coincides with the other one when epsilon is small, of course. So then let me just show you which is the technique that we use to prove these formulas. To prove formulas about the stable and unstable manifolds, etc., you have to look for the stable and unstable manifolds. And of course, all the perturbation theory in dynamical systems try to find the stable and unstable manifolds as perturbations of the homoclinic orbit you have in the unperturbed system. No, this is the classic thing. But what happens in this problem is that you can do this, and you get some approximations of the manifolds, but just when you are far away, so let me say in the real line, far away from some singularities that the homoclinic orbit of the Macmillan map has. So if you are far away from these singularities, your approximations are okay, and this is what are called usually outer approximations. This is also something, well, let me just go, later I will come back to this. So we are going to use resurgence theory, because in these kind of approaches, what you have is you have your invariant manifolds that are well approximated by the homoclinic when you are far away from these singularities that will appear here in a moment. And this is like what people in fluid dynamics also do this, when they have this flow that is well approximated by the laminar flow in the center of the channel. But then when you go close to the walls, you have a different approximation for your flow. And to find this different approximation, you get a new equation, a new, let me say, unperturbed equation, that is not linear, that is not integrable, and this is what is usually called the inner equation, okay? So in this problem we have all these inner equations, and here is when resurgence theory plays a fundamental role to obtain results in these equations, okay? And then once you have these two things, you have to use matching techniques to join all these approximations and give the result about the area. I'm not going to go here now. So let me just explain this a little, no? So you have to find these manifolds, no? You look for these parameterizations I told you before. And in fact, you can see as this Macmillan map is a symplectic map, an exact symplectic map, you can just use, instead of two coordinates, you can pass to only one coordinate psi that verifies a second order difference equation. So our problem is simply this, if you want in the abstract sense, forgetting about the geometry and the dynamical meaning. You have a functional equation, which is a difference equation, and you look for two solutions, phi s and phi u, psi s and psi u, that one goes to zero when the time goes to minus infinity, and the other goes to zero when time goes to plus infinity. You want to solve this problem, and of course it's very clear that if you have a solution of this, if you do a small translation in time, and any translation in time gives you another solution. So you just fix this origin of time, asking for these conditions that gives you that geometrically the homoclinic point is in the time equal to zero. So when you try to solve this equation and you use the classical approach, that is just let's just go and do series expansions in H. Then you look for the stable, the unstable manifold, just doing series expansions. And then what happens is that if you are in the stable case or if you are in the unstable case, you get the same series. So this means that all these functions that you get in your series are functions that go to zero at plus and minus infinity. And this means that, in fact, your stable and unstable manifold have the same asymptotic series. So you are not able to distinguish them using this method. So let me just now go very fast to the case epsilon equal to zero, because when epsilon was zero, the system was integrable. and you have the same question. You have the stable and the unstable manifolds. In this case, the manifolds coincide, and in fact, they are given explicitly by this formula. But in the general case, when epsilon is not zero, even if you have the same asymptotic series for the stable and unstable manifold, this does not mean that the manifolds coincide. This just means that they have the same asymptotic series. So we need some theory that allows us to distinguish these two solutions of your equation that have the same asymptotic series. At least, after doing this easy computation, we know that as both solutions have the same asymptotic series, this means that the difference will be something beyond all orders in H, will be something that exponential is small. So when we study this problem, as I told you before, you see that this we need to study the behavior of the manifolds close to this point. Why this point? Because this point is just the singularity of the homoclinic orbit. So if you go to this point, the way to study what happens with the manifold when you got here is just to do this change of variables. You produce z as t minus I pi over 2 divided by h. If you look at the asymptotic expansion that was here, it's clear that when you are, this thing is of order h, you lose the asymptoticity, okay? All the terms in the series are of the same order. So this is the region where you have to look for a different approximation of your manifolds. And this is what you do here. So you do this change of variables, you consider your function phi of z, that is just the change of function, and then this is the problem I'm going to study. So we could, sorry, I have been a little long, but this is, in fact, the problem I'm going to study here. So I have this map, sorry, I have this difference equation. F here is all this thing, depends on h, depends on epsilon, and I want to study these two solutions of this difference equation. During all this talk, epsilon will be here, but I am never going to assume that epsilon is small. So my only parameter, let me say, will be h, okay? So first thing you do is to do the formal expansion. You do the formal expansion looking for a solution in powers of h, okay? It's important to understand that this formal expansion is not the same as we did before, because now we did a change of variable that changed the orders in the equation, okay? So when you do this, the first thing you obtain is what I call the inner equation for phi zero. So you look for the solution as a power series. So the first one, phi zero, verifies this first equation, and phi n, in general, verify some equations that are written here. The first is called the inner equation, and let me just say that this is a nonlinear equation without parameters. I mean, remember that epsilon to me is not a parameter. I mean, it is a parameter, but I don't want to use it. So this is an equation that has no h's, no small parameter here. And then the system of equations that you get for the other phi n are equations that are linear in phi n, because this term here is just something that you know when you get to the step n of your equation. So the idea is, are we able to solve this equation and find two different solutions of these equations which correspond to the stable and unstable manifold of my original problem? And the same question for the other ones, of course. So this is the moment when all this theory of let me say recurrence theory can help us very much, because the way is the following. First, you look for formal solutions. Now I mean solutions in z. Our variable is z. I want to look for solutions that have some asymptotic properties when z goes to infinity. So first I just put phi n as a power series in 1 over z or whatever, and I try to find it. And this is going, I'm going to call this phi n tilde. Okay, this is something that can be done. Well, here I say that this depends on an extra parameter, but this is not very important. When you solve the equations, you get always freedom. Then you take parameters, and this gives you the whole system of formal solutions of your equations. So these functions that we will find will be divergent series in Z. So this is going to give us formal solutions, but divergent. Then we are going to study their Borel transforms with respect to Z. And we are going to obtain, because in fact these series are divergent but algebraic one, okay? So we are going to study the Borel transforms, and we will see that the Borel transforms are, is this working? It's not working, no? Yes, yes. The Borel transform of these functions phi tilde that we call phi n hat, are analytic close to the origin, and then we are going to study their analytic continuations. And then we are going to use the Borel-Laplace summation process to obtain functions, phi n s and phi n u, which are holomorphic in different domains, which are asymptotic, sorry, it is not said here, but functions holomorphic in different domains, and we are going to be able to compute the difference between these two functions using the theory of Borel transforms and singularities, etc. The difference between these two functions will be related with the singularities that the function phi hat has in the Borel plane. And here is when this language of Allen derivations and Rapsodian's theory will help us a lot. So let me go a little into the details of this. So the first theorem is just the computation of formal solutions, okay? You take, remember that I always will speak about two different equations. So the inner equation is the first one, and the other ones are the secondary inner equations. Everything works the same. So the most difficult one is this one because it's nonlinear. So once you have this, the other ones are very easy. So the theorem here says simply, there is a unique odd formal solution that we call phi zero tilde of the inner equation. And this solution begins by minus I, zeta minus 1, etc. So it's a formal solution in 1 over z, formal, and that's all. So now you can consider the whole system of equations, not only the inner equation, and you find a formal solution of the full equation. Let me just go back again. So we had this is the full equation, okay? So I always will use that this equation can be written as a power series in H. So in this sense, I get all these equations. So my solutions are always formal in H, okay? But not in Z, not always in Z. So this is what is written here. So phi zero is the solution of the first inner equation, phi n the solution of the other equations. But all of them are formal in Z, okay? Here you have some properties of the evaluation of phi n, is something that begins for times. So the first one, phi zero, only has negative powers. The other ones have some polynomial part, and then a whole Lorentz series in 1 over z. And here you have also some properties that are not very important now, that are simply that if you choose one of these constants equal to zero, then the evaluation decreases, etc. So what this is important is that here you have the formal solution of your equation, or you want the infinite set of solutions of all these equations, and you can get the general solution if you add to z any translation, of course. Okay, now let's remember again the case epsilon equal to zero. In the case epsilon equal to zero, this formal solution is simply the homoclinic orbit written in these variables. So you can expand this in powers of H, no? And then you get the functions phi zero tilde, phi one tilde, phi two tilde in the case epsilon equal to zero. So in the case epsilon equal to zero, here is phi zero tilde, phi one, etc., you see that these series are convergent series, okay? In fact, they are polynomials, except one term of 1 over z. So in the case epsilon equal to zero, all these formal series are convergent series, so there is no need of any theory, any extra theory. But what is going to happen when epsilon is different from zero is that these functions phi n that we found formally are, in fact, divergent series, okay? Let me skip this, not important. So, how do you analyze? So, let me just go to this part here, no? So, for non-zero epsilon, the formal solutions are divergent in Z. So, which is the way to recover something when you have a formal solution of an equation which is not a convergent series, but it is a algebraic one? So, then is the good moment to use the Borel resummation process. So, what you do is the following. You have your formal series, okay? This is phi tilde. This is a general setting, no? Phi tilde is a formal series that I write here in this way because I allow it to have some polynomial part and then an infinite Lorentz series, okay? So what is the Borel transform? The Borel transform ignore the polynomial part. You ignore it completely and you do the classical Borel transform on the infinite series. So this is the Borel transform of the terms here that have a positive value of p. Positive value of p. So in this way, you have this is a linear operator, cancels the polynomial part of phi tilde, you ignore it completely. Then the function obtained in this way depends on the new variable zeta, and in general, your new series is convergent near the origin, This means that the previous one that was divergent and was algebraic one. So the coefficients of the series we begin with have to increase as a factorial. So if your previous series, the coefficient increase like this, it's clear that when you do the Borel transform, you obtain a convergent series. But moreover, if the series you began with was already convergent, you can do this process. And then what you get is a function that is in fact entire. And moreover, it grows as an exponential at most. So in the case of the solutions of our equations, we will see that in fact, all the Borel transform will converge near the origin, but the functions that we'll define are not entire at all. I have singularities. In fact, we are going to see that the analytic continuations are singular at the points plus and minus 2pi, and in fact are singular in more places, but we don't care about it. So let me begin now this part. No? So forget this picture now, just focus in this one. So this is our data plane where we have done the Borel transform. Our Borel transform was convergent here in a disk, and now we want to extend it, okay? So the singularities of our function are in 2pi. Why? This is very easy to understand. If you look at the operator always here is this one, no? So if you take the Borel transform of this equation, translation by one in the Borel plane gives you a multiplication by an exponential of zeta, okay? And translation by minus one in the Borel plane gives you an exponential of zeta. So this is like a hyperbolic sinus of cosinus, now I don't remember cosinus, that has zeros at 2πi. So this is the reason why in the Borel plane you get singularities at these points. So it's not related with the function, Macmillan function or whatever in this side. It's just the operator. When you go to the Borel plane, naturally it gives you singularities at these points, 2πi and plus and minus. So this is the thing, no? Exactly. So in the theta plane, we will need to avoid all this part that is the dangerous one because it's where there are the singularities. So you can take here this plane R0, the cat plane that is the complex minus the lines, up and down. And then for some reasons we will need to separate a little more from the singularities, and this is this R0 rho that just take a disk around the singularity and avoid these sectors. Okay, this is the domain that is important. And then in this domain, it's easy to see that our functions that were convergent near the origin, our Borel transforms, extend analytically to this region. And if you take some rho to be not exactly on the singularity, you can see that they are bounded by an exponential. Okay? This space, that is the good space, as you will see in a moment, is what is called R0, hat R0, because it's in the Borel plane. And then the counterpart in the formal plane, that is called R0 tilde, so the serie phi tilde. So this is what happens to our equations. All of our equations have Borel transforms that I call phi n hat. Remember that we had this phi n tilde, that was the formal series in Z. Now we have the Borel transforms that are phi n hat, are convergent if Z is small than 2pi, and moreover, the final homomorphic functions if zeta belongs to R0, okay? And moreover, if you separate a little from the singularities, then you take a rho and you separate a little in this new domain that I called R0 rho. Ah, there's a mistake here, but well, I0 rho. Then your functions increase at most as an exponential. So why is this important? This is very easy to understand. Now you take a, begin again, no? We take a formal series, you consider its Borel transform, its Borel transform is phi hat has an extension to this domain, okay? So you can take any line here, or whatever, and then you can simply do the following operation, You can take your function phi hat, and then this is just the Laplace transform of the continuation phi hat. And then you add here this polynomial part that we forget at the beginning. So you took this formal series, forget the polynomial part, you got a series around the origin, you extend it to this domain, and then you can take any path in this domain and do the Laplace transform and add the polynomial part. In this way, what you got is a function, not a series, a function that is holomorphic exactly in this half plane, okay? This is just counting exponentials, etc. So any path here gives you a function in Z analytic here. So now what you can do is just use Cauchy theorem. So I can take a path here or I can take another path, and both integrals would be the same because in the middle my function has no singularities. So you can move the path theta from this point here to here, and this is going to give you just the analytic continuation of the same function. And this is this interval here. So you can take the path here in this interval, and you can do the same in the other side of the cutted plane, and you will get another function in principle, because you cannot compare paths here with paths in the left, because in the middle there are the forbidden zone. And then you will get two different functions that we call S plus of phi tilde and S minus of phi tilde. So you can look at these as functions, or you can look at the S plus and S minus as operators that go from formal series to analytic functions, okay? And then once you have these functions, of course, these functions are defined through the corrected formula when theta and zeta are related with the correct domains, no? So you get two holomorphic functions in these domains that I call D plus and D minus. D plus and D minus will be exactly all this, that is the union of all these half planes, okay? This would be D plus, and the corresponding one this way would be D minus. Okay, then we can apply this to our series, and then you got these two domains. These two domains, well, looking at them, it's very easy to see that they are in fact sectorial neighborhoods of infinity, of opening 2 pi minus 2 delta. One of them contains R plus, and the other one contains R minus, okay? Important things, the formal series you began with when you did this process is the asymptotic expansion of the functions you have constructed. So you have two different functions into different domains which have the same asymptotic expansion, that is the formal expansion you obtained in your equation. More important thing, the two domains, D plus and D minus, have intersections. I don't have a picture, so you have to have some imagination, but the other domain do like this, no? So you have one intersection is here, another one here. Has two connected components, the intersection. One contains points with imaginary part of theta positive, and the other one contains points with imaginary part of theta negatives. I am interested in the lower domain because of the problem, the original problem in the dynamics of the separatrices, etc., but the computation can also be done in the other part. So, So these two domains have two connected components, the intersection has two connected components, and in this part of the intersection, the two functions, S plus and S minus of phi tilde, in general, do not coincide. They coincide in the case epsilon equal to zero. Why? Because in the case epsilon equal to zero, the phi tilde, the series phi tilde was convergent. So at the end, this is exactly the same function. The Borel transform has no singularities. These barriers are not there. But in the general case, S plus and S minus cannot extend one to the other. So are different functions, okay? So, we can also vary the parameter rho, that was this parameter that gives us the exponential tau, obtaining two wider domains, the S and the U, that are the domains I'm talking all the time. So now the important thing is when it comes all this theory of a call, is that these operators, R plus, Rho zero, that is this space of formal series, etc., is a differential subalgebra in the sense that it's stable by multiplication. Multiplication goes to convolution in the Borel plane, and the singularities can be analyzed very well, etc., and differentiation. And the operators are algebra morphisms because they commute with the product and they commute with the derivation. So this means that, very important in this problem, they commute with the translation derivation operator. So this means that if you apply S plus and S minus to a formal series of your equation, what you get is a solution of the equation itself. So you begin with a formal thing that was nothing because it was completely divergent, etc., and you get a function that is a solution of your equation, and that has the series as its asymptotic expansion. And in this way you get two functions that are analytic solutions of the equations in different domains. So this can be applied to our problem, no? All this setting, no? And then you get that from our functions phi and tilde, we get some functions phi and s. Sorry, from our series phi and tilde, we get some functions phi and s and phi and u that are the Borel summations in different directions, which are holomorphic in the corresponding domains. Here the domains depend on n, because everything depends on n, no? We do all the equations one after the other. And moreover, the functions you get, both are asymptotic to the same series, that is the formal series you began with. Okay. So up to here, let me skip this because it's not that important. Up to here, you got these two different solutions of your equation. So this is progress in our setting, because when we did the first approximation in the real domain, we were not able to distinguish the stable from the unstable. Now we are able to distinguish them, okay, with all this Borel resummation process. You get two different solutions of the equation. But now the next point, the next step that is important for us, is that we want to know the difference between these solutions in this intersection of the domains where both are defined. Because this is essential to get the splitting, the result of the in the real domain about the different stable and unstable manifolds. Okay? Once you have a formula for the difference between the stable and unstable manifolds, you can get the area of the lobes, you can get the angle, you can get whatever you want. But you need to something that gives you the difference between them. And we didn't want a bound; we want an asymptotic formula for this difference. Okay? So here is when all this theory of Eckel is very, very useful in this setting, no? Because now you have the following. So we begin again. We got this formal solution, this formal series. We got the Borel transform. The Borel transform was a function that was convergent at the origin, but then we have extended, no? And now we are going to go closer to these singularities, to pi I, and see what happens there, no? And then the first definition is that we say that this function phi hat has a simple ramified singularity at omega. Here omega is plus or minus 2 pi I, but this is of course general. If you can write, forget this part, look at here, no? If you have that, when you are close to omega, your function phi hat can be expressed as a polar part, a logarithmic part, and some analytic part, okay? So just to make things fit well, the logarithmic part has in front some function that has to be analytic close to the origin. This is right written here, no? And then what you do is, to make the formalism work better, you call phi tilde to the formal series, that is, on one side the positive piece is the Laplace transform of phi hat, and then you put this coefficient times zeta to the minus p, without the factorials, etc. This is just a question that you will see in a moment, that then the theory fits better, okay? But the important thing in this definition is not that phi tilde is this, just that your function close to the singularity has a polar part and a logarithmic part, okay? Then you call phi tilde to all this expansion that has some positive powers that comes from the polar part and an infinite number of negative powers that come from this function phi hat, and you call this the derivative of phi tilde in the point omega, okay? For instance, if omega is not a singularity, the alien derivatives in the phi tilde in the point omega is zero, what is normal, no? So this is what are called the constants of this derivation. So this is what is the general definition of alien derivative is more complicated, because in this case we are dealing just with the first singularities closest to the real line. Of course, once you cross one of these singularities, as your function is multivaluated, you can have very different behaviors considering the different branches, and then the definition of the alien derivative needs to do some average between all the different branches of your function, etc., but I'm not going to go here, to go there. So just let me say you something. We began by a formal series phi tilde, and we got another formal series psi tilde. And this function psi tilde, this series phi tilde, is completely determined by the original one. In fact, by the Borel transform of the original one. You can see that here the polynomial part of phi tilde has no role. The polynomial part of phi tilde, if you change it, you get the same psi tilde, eh? Because this is not, this does not appear. What is crucial here is the Borel transform. Okay. Phi hat extends holomorphically to the universal cover of the punteric disk centered at omega. And what is this function psi hat? Psi hat is just the variation of this extension. Because when you, if you compute phi of omega plus psi, and then you subtract phi of omega plus after a turn around omega, what you get, of course, is the polar part disappear, but then you get just the logarithmic gives you just the function psi hat. So psi hat is the variation of monodromy, and in the language of resonance theory is called the minor, okay, of the singularity. The polynomial part of the function psi tilde is just the comes from the polar part of the singularity. So if you take now phi hat of omega plus zeta and you subtract the ramification, then you get just the polar part, no? So this polar part gives you the positive part of the power series in psi tilde. What depends on the extension of the branch of the logarithm you take is the regular part, of course. If you change the branch of the logarithm you take, this regular part changes, but this regular part does not play any role in our computations. In our computations, as you will see in a moment, only this and this are important. Okay, then... Yes. No. No, no, because it doesn't take into account the polar part of the first series we begin with. But of course in the alien derivatives, the alien derivative will be this function psi tilde. So in this function psi tilde there are the polar coefficients. But when you begin the problem you always begin with something that has a polar part also. So to do the resummation process, this polar part is just a finite sum. You don't need to do any resummation in this part. But no, the polar part is here, it's very important. Okay. Yes? So now this is the what I said. No, these two operators, delta 2 pi I and delta 2 minus 2 pi I, are defined in the superspace of our formal series, which consist on formal series whose Borel transform, of course, are analytic in the origin. This is the definition of this space, but that the extension has simply ramified singularities at these points. And the value of this operator applied to one of these series is another series that is algebraic one series. Because we assume, this is important here, that this thing that is in front of the logarithm is analytic at zero. So the alien derivative of the function phi tilde is the of the series phi tilde is the series psi tilde. So it has a finite part that comes from the polar terms here, an infinite one that is the Laplace transform of this, that as this is a convergent series, the Laplace transform will be a algebraic one series again. So the alien derivation gives you values in algebraic one formal series. This symbol means not algebraic one formal series, but algebraic one formal series plus a polynomial part. Okay? Have a polynomial part and an infinite series that is algebraic one. This is what the operator gives you. Okay? So, I already said it, but again I want to insist that in fact this is an easier definition of the alien derivatives because we are considering the first singularity and we are assuming that our function phi hat was analytic on the origin. If our function phi hat had some ramification of the origin, etc., we need to go to the general resurgence theory that is a little more complicated. So these are just particular cases of alien derivation. So the important thing for me, as somebody who is a little out of the theory, is that this thing that is called derivation is because it is a derivation in the sense that it verifies the rules of a derivation. So if there is a linear operator, And it verifies the Leibniz rule. So in the sense that when you apply this to a product of series, of course the product of series in the Borel plane goes to the convolution of functions of phi hats, no? And then it's very, well, not easy, but you can see, this is what the Kalf's theory does, that in fact all this convolution preserves the shape of this kind of singularity. So you, if you have, if both series have polar and ramified singularities, the convolution also has the singularities, you can see where they are, etc., etc. So this is, then you get this formula. And this is what is very important in the, when you want to compute these Alin derivatives in a concrete example. And this is what I would like to explain you in a moment. So in our case, we had these functions phi hat n, with that you can see that have simply ramified singularities in here. We have to see this, okay? We can describe these singularities through the Alin derivative. So what I mean is that it's the same to see that your function phi hat n, when you extend it, has this kind of singularities with polar and logarithmic parts, that to see that when you apply this to this, you get the corresponding series with a polynomial part and an infinite Jevray part. And how do you prove this? I'm not going to go here, but in fact what you do, well, I will go to this in a moment. So what we are going to see is that in fact this operator delta applied to this can be computed in terms of some auxiliary formal series of your problem. So at the end, in the computational side, this is very convenient because at the end, this theory tells you, okay, there is a big theory here that tells you have to go to the complexity that your function is ramified, etc., etc. But at the end, to compute these Alin derivatives is just a formal question. And this is what is very important because formal things are easy. So let me introduce how these two functions appear here, okay, these two functions, psi 1 and psi 2. So remember that we had a full equation, a full linear equation. I have to show it to you again, even if it is... Okay, this is our equation, okay? So we have found something. Remember that everything is always formal in H, but not in Z. Eh? So we have found something that is formal also in Z that we call the formal solution, okay? So now, once you have, in the classical theory of differential or difference equations, when you have a solution of your equation, you can always consider the variational equation around this solution, okay? You can do this also at a formal level. You have a formal solution of this equation, then you consider the formal, let me say, variational equation. So this is what I do here. So you take, this is just the variational equation of the equation I show you. The variational equation, well, here you put the derivative of f substituted here in the formal solution that we got first. This is a formal equation, okay? Of course, from this formal equation, you can expand in H and get a lot of formal variational equations associated to all the linear equations I explained before, but it's better to look at this in this way. You can also do the same thing, but not with a formal solution, but with that solution of your equation. I mean, you also got this solution after the Borel resummation process. You got the phi u solution, no? And you also got the phi s one. But let's focus in the phi u. So phi u is the Borel resummation of phi tilde, okay? Or if you prefer, phi zero u is the Borel resummation of phi zero tilde, phi n u is the Borel resummation of phi n tilde. I mean, in H everything is formal always, but not in Z. Okay, so this is a solution of the equation. So I can consider the same variational equation, but now here I have a function. Okay? Then, variational equations are linear equations. And linear equations are, let me say, easy to solve. You consider this, this is the variational equation. So every time you have a variational equation around the solution, if you differentiate the solution with respect to Z, I mean, eh? Because the equation is respect to Z. If you differentiate phi respect to Z, you get a solution of the variational equation. This is a classical thing, no, in variational equations. So, we are going to look for a fundamental system of solutions of these variational equations. Fundamental means that the Wronskian is one. The Wronskian in this setting of different equations is just this. So, the thing is that we can found a fundamental system of solutions of the variational equation, formal in Z. That of course is assumed in H, etc., but these things are all formal in Z. And in fact, the first one, as I told you, is just the derivative of phi tilde. And in linear equations, it's very easy. Once you have a second order linear equation, you have one solution, it's very easy to find an explicit formula for a second one. This is the same as you do in second order differential equations. So from this one, you get another one, and you can obtain the expansion in A, the expansion in Z, you can obtain everything. So formally, you can solve the variational equation. This is the main idea here. Okay. Then, of course, once you have these formal solutions, no, phi u tilde, phi 2 tilde, you can just use again the Borel resummation process. And if you do the Borel resummation process to the solutions of this equation, you get the solutions of this other equation. Yes, because this thing is just the Borel resummation of this. So if this Borel resummation commutes with all the operators, if you do the Borel resummation of the formal solutions of the variational equation here, you get the solutions of this one. So in this way, you get also a system of solutions of your variational equations. So you got the solutions and the formal ones. This is important to understand. And now it comes the last result that is important in this. That is the following. Let me try to explain the idea because the formulas are a little complicated. You have this variational equation, okay? But this variational equation, remember, that comes from another equation, okay? You take the phi tilde is the solution of this other equation. And I said before that the alien derivations have the properties of the derivations. So they commute with they are linear, they commute with the derivation, with the translator operator, etc. So when you apply delta to this, delta 2 pi I to this function, this new thing verifies again the variational equation. This is what is fundamental here. So the alien derivative behaves as a derivative. So when you apply it to an equation, you get the variational equation again. So as your variational equation is a linear equation, once you have a fundamental set of solutions, any other solution has to be a linear combination of this fundamental solution. So simply what you have, let me try to go here first. What you have is that when you apply to your phi tilde your operators, this thing has to be a linear combination of your fundamental set of solutions, okay? Of course, it is something that is formal in H because the alien derivatives are not invented to apply to formal series in H, but you can just extend the value of the alien derivative in a formal series in H just with this formula, no? And here this is very clear. The alien derivative is also a solution of the variational equation, so it has to be a linear combination of these two. If you write this now in powers of H, you obtain the result that is written here, that is a little more complicated, that tells you, take phi n tilde, that is the formal solution we began with, in the inner equation. Compute the delta plus 2 pi I or the delta minus. So this thing, that is again a formal series, has to be a combination of the basis of solutions of these two equations. So here you get this sum, etc., because you are just equating powers of H in both sizes. So this is nothing very important. Of course, this is very technical. All these functions A plus are this sum, B plus is this sum. All these things are formal in H, everything is formal in H, but all the coefficients are analytic in epsilon, this is important for us, and polynomials in this coefficient B. So now the idea is that we know, we have our equation, we know the formal solutions, we have the variational equation, we know the variational, the formal solutions of the variational equations, and from this you can get the alien derivatives of your solution. And now, to finish, let me just explain you why it's so important to get these alien derivatives of your formal solution if you want to compute the difference between phi ns and phi nu. Let me forget the technical part and just go to the intuitive one, no? So phi ns and phi nu were defined by integrals, no? One was the integral in the right hand side, and the other one the integral in the left hand side. So when you subtract phi n s minus phi n u, what you got is an infinite integral in both sides, okay? That comes from minus infinity with some slope pi minus beta and goes to infinity with beta. We'll have to compute this integral, that's all. You know about this function that it has singularities at the points plus and minus 2 pi I, that you can compute the singularity there, etc. So what you do is to just deform a little the paths of integration. And this is the picture. So you had an integral that was like this. So what you do is you come from minus infinity, you turn around the first singularity, you go again to infinity this way, you come back, you cross again before the second singularity because there is another singularity here, and you come back. Explaining in terms of Riemann surfaces, etc., the first path here and the last one are in the main sheet of the Riemann surface. Instead, this other path here, these other two, are in the first half sheet on the second Riemann, the second sheet, if you want, no? So now what is important is that we are able to do this continuation thanks to the fact that we knew the behavior of our function in this singularity, and we know this because this is what the alien derivative E gives us. We give us the polar part and we give us the logarithmic part. So we can compute this integral, and this integral is very easy because this is what is called here D, okay? And then as we knew that the singular behavior of phi n was of this type, no? This part here, that is the polar part, when you compute the integral, gives you the residuum result, no? A residuum result. This is the reason why all this notation with factorials, because in this cancels with the computation, okay? So this, the polar part gives you that the two paths that go from infinity and go to infinity cancel, and here you have the residuum computation. Okay, and in the logarithmic part, then what cancels is the computation around the singularity, but the two paths coming and going back to infinity, as the logarithmic is a ramified singularity, you got this formula. So what is this formula again? Look, this is just the positive powers of the function psi tilde, as we defined before, and this is just the Laplace transform of phi hat. So what you have is that this difference is just the derivative, the alien derivative, applying to it the operator S minus. So this is the result, okay? As we know that the operator applied to this, we can compute it because we had this previous result that this is just a linear combination of the function psi, u and s, you can get the value of the integral. From the other part, the upper part that was here, you just bone things. And then you can see that this gives you a something that is smaller in the terms of imaginary part of Z. So what you have here is that knowing very well the behavior of your function around the first singularity, you can get this difference. And as we are thinking all the time that zeta will be in the lower half plane, so imaginary part of zeta is very negative, this is an asymptotic formula because the terms here are, this is exponentially small in Z, but this is exponentially smaller, okay, because this term is bigger than 1. So in this sense, all this analysis in the Borel plane gave us access to the precise measure of the difference between our two different Borel resummation formulas, okay? So then after you have this, of course this is not the matter in this conference, but after you have after this, you can go to the real domain where your manifolds exist and translate this formula in another one that gives you finally the formula for the area, but this is not here very important. So I think I'm going to stop here.